Like I said, we have we've flown in international speakers. Actually, that's a lie. We didn't fly them in. We heard they flew in. There's a rumor they flew in. But we have two speakers. But I'm going to first introduce. We have Pelle. I probably hacked that up. Pelle from Copenhagen. And he's going to be our first speaker for the evening. So I'll, please give us a warm welcome for Pelle.
Hi, I'm Pelle. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Thursday night stag meeting in Copenhagen, and if you guys show up any Thursday, you're just welcome to go, to call me. And we haven't had a girl try to get in as of yet, but we have a strict policy of not restricting that if we have a needy alcoholic at the door. So, well, this is such a great opportunity, getting to stand here in front of you and tell you my story. I got my first spiritual awakening when I was 18 years old. I waited till I was 18 till I took my first drink. And I was the type, I was never going to drink. I thought drunk people, they're boring people, they irritate me, they just leave me alone. But then one summer night when my parents were away, I held this big barbecue and invited all my friends. And some of them brought some vodka to drink. And I had made my decision before the night that was a night. That was the night I was going to start drinking. And I hadn't told them, but they showed up. They had enough. So when they pulled up a pair of glasses, I pulled my own up. And it only took one sip. I was sold. That was the solution to all my problems. Because prior to that time, I had been irritated, restless, and discontented. I felt worthless, and all the other guys were more cool than me. I didn't have the guts to talk to the pretty girls. I was a mess. But there was the solution. I remember distinctly that night going to the bathroom and smiling in the mirror, and I just felt, oh my God! Oh my God, that's the first time I really smiled at myself. That was my real smile, never seen it before. And to make a long story short, I ended up that night on my parents' couch with a bucket beside the couch, The Simpsons playing on the TV, and I was drunk out of my mind, throwing up and laughing at the same time. And I was great. I was exactly right. When I woke up the next morning, I was energized. I went out and mowed the lawn. And I had one clear thought in my mind. This I'm going to do again. So I was always the designated driver. That commitment I gave up right away, because every time there was some drinking going on, I was drinking. I was not driving. And I think in the start, I just drank with my mates. But my alcoholism progressed very, very fast, because a couple of years later, I went to med school for the first time. And they put a lot of pressure on you. And you have to study all the time. You have to read this and that. And they have tests. And I wasn't able to focus on anything. So my daily drinking started pretty early. And it was always the illusion of only a couple of beers. Only a couple of beers. And then I'm okay. Then I can concentrate. Then I can be here. But you know the story. So after flunking twice out of med school in Iceland, I decided that the school ain't right. And I moved to Denmark and been living in Denmark ever since for 10 years. And boy, see, in Iceland, alcohol prices are really high. You pay like $80 for a quart of vodka. It's crazy. And how much for a six pack? Maybe $20 or something like that. So it's crazy, and who can live like that? So I moved to Denmark, and Denmark is like the beer capital of Europe. And if you want cheap alcohol, it's there. So I came off the airplane, and the first thing I did, buy a beer. I bought an imported beer, bought a Heineken, but I didn't know better. I was 24 at the time, and as it says in Bill's story, I hardly drew a sober breath for the next 6 years. And it wasn't all bad. In the start, in the beginning, it was with my mates in med school and with my wife, with people I knew. But I still went to med school in Denmark. And that's a lot of pressure. And I skipped school because the other kids were better than me. I didn't know the language good enough. I can't remember all the things I should remember. And I just holed up at home and I started drinking. And it was terrible. It took me 4 years to be through. They're so much more large in Denmark. They're very democratic. Oh, we will help you get through this. It took me 4 years to drink myself out of med school there. And I really had some good people trying to help me along the way. They said, oh my God, you have so much anxiety. So they gave me pills. They sent me to psychologists and psychiatrists. And nothing helped. There was only one thing that helped. That was drinking. But I need to drink more and more often. I usually say I didn't have a problem with alcohol. Or if I had a problem with alcohol, it stopped working. Because at the end of my drinking, a typical day would look like this. I woke up, same time as my wife, kissed her goodbye, and said, yeah, I'm going to school in half an hour. Just got to take a bath, and then I'm off to school. But I hadn't told her that my first waking thought that day is, today I'm not going to drink. As soon as he went out the door, the thinking began. Oh, my God, it's a big world out there. A lot of pressure. And I just got to take the edge off. Two beers only. Then I'm going to school. And you know, I believe what the big book tells us about this disease is a three-part disease. We have the physical allergy whenever I drink, and that's proven day after day after day in my active career, that when I take that first drink, I keep drinking. And I keep drinking till I can't drink no more. And how crazy is that? Waking up day after day after day after day, making the same promise to yourself every day, today I'm not going to drink. And half an hour later, I'm doing it again. I hit rock bottom April 6th, 2004. Where I was once again sitting in my living room. It was about 11 a.m. And the thought occurred to me, maybe alcohol is the problem. never occurred to me before. It was the high pressure, it was my depressions, my anxiety, my lousy childhood, you name it. That was the reason. That was the reason to all my problems. My lack of discipline, my lack of willpower. Maybe alcohol was a problem. And I don't know where that thought came from, but I thought, I got to get in touch with AA. I never knew anybody in AA. I don't know where the thought came from. So I went on the internet, looked at AA up, and called them. I was drunk out of my mind. But a well-meaning lady took the call. She was sure that I'd been in AA before. Oh, I've never been in AA before. Help me. Send somebody out to me. She did. Sent this guy named Thor out. A big biker type guy with the crew cut, the big tattoos and the big muscles, and he scared the living daylights out of me. But I opened the door, let him in, and then we sat in our living room. And I don't remember much from that conversation, other than at some time I asked him, is it okay if I get a beer? But the one thing he told me that I still remember was, are you willing to do anything to get over this? Are you willing to do anything for a victory over alcoholism? Because that's the criteria. You have to be willing to do anything. And he took me to my first meeting that day. Great, I saw these steps on the wall. And he said, oh, one, two, three. Four takes a bit of work. Five, yeah, I reckon I've done five or six of them already. I got this desire to share my experience with the group. Drunk out of my skull. They shut me down, I don't know why. And I liked it so much that I decided to take another meeting that day. But I was just by around the corner to a bar in the meantime while I waited for the other meeting. So, hey, I was drunk anyway, and I was quitting tomorrow, right? So better get the most out of it. But all went well for 10 days. And that's where the second part of this disease comes in. Just one example of my history of, and that's the mental obsession. At 10 days sober, Friday, by the way, I got this idea. 10 days sober, Pally, you're doing a heck of a job. Good for you. You know, you got this under control. So why don't you celebrate these 10 days of sobriety with a couple of beers? And I did. And two beers became four beers. Four beers became six beers. And I came home at 5 o'clock in the morning with my pants torn and some lipstick on my shirt. And it was a horrible night. And that was a way for me for my first couple of months in AA. In and out. 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. And I remember the 31st of May, lying in bed after another drunk. Just feeling gutted and tired and sick and all that. I turned over and looked at my wife and said, you know what? I'm done. I can't take any more of this. I said, I'm through. And I was sober. And I went to my meetings. I got myself a sponsor. He had some nice suggestions, which I completely ignored. And 17 days later, 17 days, by the way, is how long I can stay sober on my willpower. I have no experience of being able to be sober longer than that on my own willpower. The 17th of June was the day my last drunk started. And if there was one day of the year I shouldn't drink, that was the day. It was my ex-wife's birthday. She was getting, her best friend was coming from London with her 4-year-old daughter to visit us and stay with us. And I found myself sitting on the sofa yet again with the TV turned all the way up so I wouldn't hear my own, all that noise in my head. And I was drinking. And to this day, I can't tell you how that drunk started. I can't tell you that. And the Big Book tells us exactly the same thing around a strange mental blank spot where nothing I put between myself and alcohol is sufficient to keep me from drinking. And if there is something that has scared me shitless in this life, sorry for cursing, it's that day. Because my wife came home, she found her husband death drunk on the sofa yet again. And she asked, "Why are you drinking?" And I gave her the only answer I could give, and I think it was the most truthful answer I ever could have given. "I don't know. Because I don't need a big reason to go drinking. I drink when I'm happy. I drink when I'm sad. I drink when I'm depressed. It doesn't matter. I just drink. That's what I do." That drunk lasted 3 days, 2 or 3 days. And at the end of that drunk was complete defeat. I was willing to do anything. So I did what people suggested around me. I went to a 28-day program because my parents told me to. No argument there. If you feel that's the right thing to do, I'll do it. And I'll tell you, because I got a spiritual experience during that 28-day program. I went to Iceland for that treatment, and two things started there. I started praying. I started going physically down on my knees every morning, every night, and I started praying. And those were not prayers like my pre-AA prayers. "Please, God, get me through this exam and I'll be a good boy. Please don't let my wife find out who I've been messing around with." No, I prayed for my family. I prayed that they would not worry about me. I prayed for my wife that she would be able to take care of not only her job, but my job, which she was taking care of at the same time. So focus shifted. Focus shifted from being praying for myself to start praying for other people. And one day, up on a mountaintop in Iceland, something happened. I looked around all directions. I was completely alone. Oh, that's a lie. There were some sheep over there. but they don't count. And I got this feeling that no matter what, I'll never be alone again. Because that's the worst thing about alcoholism. You're so alone. You can be in a party full of people and you're alone. That spiritual experience did wonders for me. I felt good. I finished the program and went back to Copenhagen. And things were so good that I saw no reason to start working the steps. The Big Book mentions the varieties of religious experience by William James. He was this scholar that went around and talked to people about spiritual experiences, and did it in a very scientific manner. And he found out two things about a spiritual experience. They never happen When you're on top of your game? Never. And they're transitory. The effect of a spiritual awakening ebbs off. So 4 months sober, getting a divorce because my codependent wife had no one to be codependent with, so she wanted out. I was just insane. I was really having trouble with my emotional nature. The only time I've taken my hand through a door was sober. So 4 months sober with absolutely no recovery in my body. And I called my sponsor. And I said, oh, what should I do? I said, I can't live like this. And he said, start writing. You know what to do. And I did. Took me 2 months to finish my first four step. And I usually thank my younger brother, sent in spirit. He came into the program after me, but we had the same sponsor. You know what he did? He was faster than me. He finished his four step before I did. And that was like the last nudge over the finish line when it came to the four step. I fifth stepped the day after I finished. And if you've never tried it, try it. Because in the third step prayer says, free me from the bondage of self. That's all nice and fine. But I found out that I have to take some action to get free of that bondage. And for me, that was writing out my four step, seeing where I had a part in all this disaster that was my life. And free, that was what it was after I did my first fifth step. I was completely free. And I think the fifth step promises are some of the most beautiful promises in the book. I can look the world in the eye. I could do that. It's like somebody took a ton of bricks off my shoulders. I was completely free. And since that day, there has been no other solution for me than this program of action that our big book describes. How long? Doc's going to do 6 to 12. So what I want to finish up with then is that you don't have it anymore in the States, but we have this AA triangle, the three sides, the unity, service, and recovery. The steps are the recovery part, but it's just as important for me to make sure the other parts are right. Since being a part of the fellowship, having a home group, since being a part of instead of a part of, isn't separated from everything else like I always used to. And service, I want to finish up on service because that's one of the richest areas in my life today. The things I get to do in AA are just so wonderful. I started just making coffee, putting the chairs up, and then I was the bookseller in my home group. Then I became a secretary at some point. But the most exciting part I've been allowed to do in sobriety is that we have a lot of dark tunnel AA in Denmark. And to change that, some guy started throwing these international conventions in Copenhagen. And I've been so lucky to be a part of that in recovery. We had Chris and Doug come over last November, and Doug's coming again in May. And it's so wonderful because we really come together and you can feel this is the fellowship of the Spirit. We're all here in recovery together. And little by little, since we started that project, that has grown. We now have 3 or 4 conventions in Denmark. And now we are going to start our own speaker traditions. I also get to be a tiny part of something called XA Speakers, which makes recovery speaks accessible to the whole world for free. And it's just so exciting to be a part of that. I've gotten a life that is so full now. And I was a hopeless drunk. Every night I went to bed, I only had one thought in my mind. I hope I don't wake up. Every morning I woke up, today I'm not going to drink. That was all. Today, I'm able to be useful to other people. I live a good, healthy life, and I get to come, go places and see people, and I'm not locked in my small apartment. I'm living life, and that's all because that when I first came into the doors of AA, somebody stuck their hand out to me and said, "Welcome," and they helped me recover from this disease. So, yeah, thanks a lot. You're just great.
That was great. This next speaker is a long friend of this group's, original Jersey boy, and a Florida transplant. And it's an honor and it's a pleasure to have a friend of ours come up and share with us again. And I'll turn the meeting over to Doug.
The Pennsylvania girls. We got everybody here today. Hi, everybody. My name is Doug. I am an alcoholic. Yeah. It's good to be here. Paylor was talking about this. Is it XA?
Yeah.
XA. I get emails now from all over the world, Japan, Australia. I mean everywhere, for people hearing the tapes that they put out for free, which is absolutely amazing. It really is. If you don't realize on how many lives that you all are touching right now, if you're sponsoring somebody, it's huge and it's massive beyond anything that you can believe. We have something here that is absolutely phenomenal, and there's no place that I would really rather be. And to be able to speak around the world and around the United States is a pleasure, because I travel for a living, and then I travel to go do these workshops and these seminars. But my mom passed Thursday. And my sisters called up, and they said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I have a huge commitment in Washington, Charlottesville, Virginia, which is right outside Washington. And they love AA. And my mother adored what you all did to me. She didn't understand it, and I'll tell you a couple of stories about that. But she adored what you all did for me. And so I said, I want to do that commitment. And my sisters called back and they said, okay, what we're going to do is we'll do the wake on Sunday and we'll bury her on Monday. So you do what you got to do and then come back and see us. And I thought that was the most amazing thing that I've ever experienced. And, the commitment was wonderful and beautiful and so many people showed up. I'm still getting emails to this day. But I watched my sisters going through this, this turmoil, and there was a lot of, they're not alcoholics, but they drank probably the most I've ever seen them drink. And I had the pleasure of going to a meeting last night. and meet with, you know, 100 guys that I had never met before. And I just said, would you mind if I help set up and break down? And, you know, and they were just, oh, it was the best. We got the best gig going on here. I'm telling you what, we really do. And then I get an email saying that I'm speaking at the Bernardsville meeting, which was nice. I didn't know that, Chris. So thank you for the email. And then I guess I'm doing 6 through 12, so thank you for that. So how am I doing so far? Am I prepared? Totally prepared here. I went 90 days, and I did the not drinking, going to meeting thing. Do you have the 12 steps here? I did the not drinking and going to meetings, and I was working a selfish program, and I was absolutely miserable. Miserable. So on the 90 days in Florida, I've been down there 28 years, but I am a Jersey boy. I was up here for 18 years, and then they asked me to leave, and so I'll tell you about that amends to the state of New Jersey. And so I was doing the not drinking, going to meetings thing, and after 90 days, I was picking up these little trinkets. So you have a doctor over here, and now I'm going to start telling you about the airlines, because I'm a retired airline captain from one of the major airlines. So you're going to love this. So now you're never going to get operated on or hop on an airplane by the end of this evening. So I did the don't drink, go to the meetings. I was picking up my 90-day chip. The FAA had taken all my licenses away. And I went to Happy Hills, like Chris, with all the other Happy Hill airline pilots, you know. And it was a 28-day program that kept me in for 72. I was a little more happier than everybody else. So I go back to this little island that I live on, Amelia Island, and I don't drink and I go to meetings, and it was absolutely terrible. So I pick up this little trinket, door prize gift, whatever you want to call it, and 90 days, and I was running out the door because in Florida we got the coolest thing. It's called drive-through liquor stores. And so the left side of my car is all shop because they'd be like, here comes that pilot. So I had a blue car that was white on the left and it was blue. And they'd be like, hey, Captain. Start them up. And you'd think I'd take off the stripes, you know, and the hat. So I'm going out the door, and I said, you know, who wants to be an airline pilot anyway? I'm going to go drink. And I was going to go to Five Point Liquors because I was wondering what it was like to get out of a car and actually walk into this place. So I was the drive there. And this guy stepped in front of me. He's my first sponsor. His name's Greg H. from Hoboken, New Jersey. On an island in Florida, go figure, as you would say. Go figure. So he said, I want you to remember something before you go out. He says, make sure you don't tell everybody that AA failed you because you never worked AA. And I said, is this coming from the man who comes over my house and brings me to these like halfway houses and these jails and I'm going to 4 meetings a day? And he says, oh, don't get me wrong. You're the mayor of the fellowship. You're even chairing meetings. And you're half psyched out. But you never worked the program of recovery. So I'll tell you what we'll do. If you really need to make a challenge. Come over to my house Tuesdays and Thursdays. I know you're unemployed. And I couldn't even fly a kite. I didn't have a license. So he says, come over to my house Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 o'clock. He says, if you come at 8:01, don't show up. He says, if you lie to me once, that's it. We clear? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'll be there. I get in my car, I go over to Five Point Liquors. And I stop at the light, and it was a Saturday, and I made a left. I didn't go. I said, you know, this guy's just enough of a jerk. Well, I'll give it a shot. I still don't want to fly airplanes, but... So I did, and I brought a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he brought me through these steps, and I did my fifth step with him. It was 22 pages, and I left out the thing. Now, come on. We all have the thing. My thing happened to be a Tennessee thing. When I was teaching at the University of Tennessee, and a female was involved with the thing. So I left it out. But, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when it starts talking about the fifth step, it talks about, and it mentions it 9 times in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Are you sure you told me everything? Every dark cranny of the past. And I would look at him, and by the 7th time, I'm like, Greg, don't you trust me? I just said 7 times, yeah. Everything's in here. Don't you trust me, Greg? You know? And he said, well, actually, I can care less. He says, but I'm going to ask you one more time, because this is the 9th time. Are you telling somebody else all your story? Withholding nothing. You know, and that's when I came out and said, yes, Tennessee, 1986. I don't know her name. You know, and I was done, and I was like, oh, my God, did I just tell him that? You know, he's going to look at me like I'm a freak. And then, he's like, dude, that ain't nothing. Let me tell you my thing. And when he was done, I was like this. I was like, dude, you're sick. I went home and I did my hour quiet time. Now, understand, I have like massive ADD, which is really cool because I forgot why I'm even looking in this book. But anyway, I have massive ADD. So like, you know, sleep, I have one of my wonderful, beautiful employees over here. So I'm trying to make sure everything I say is actually truthful. It's easier when she's not watching. But I think it was probably about 3 minutes. It was supposed to be an hour. It was about 3 minutes, you know. And I still didn't believe in God. I was still atheist. But I felt a part of you. I really did. And then I got a sheet with every known character defect to man and woman. And my sponsor said, okay, I want you to fill this out. And I have a package also. I put a package together over all these years. And it has all the forms. And it's right out of the big book. And it's really good. And if you need it, please email me and I'll give you my email address afterwards. And so when I finished up with that, he says, now give it to your wife. And she filled out my character defects. You know, and we compared them and it was like, am I really that much of an asshole? You know what I'm saying? Whoa. That was kind of ugly. That is the same ex-wife that was just at my mom's funeral and spoke at it and we hugged and we're just very close. We're very close, all due to this program. She got rid of me, codependent, after a year. But she's a dear. And she was sitting right next to my now wife. And it's just my life is just great. So it really is. And then so I looked at all this stuff that I had going on. And I noticed that I didn't know who I was. Does that make sense to you? I was Doug, the airline pilot. Always. Hey, this is my buddy Doug, the airline pilot. I was never Doug M, you know, or my last name. I was always Doug, the airline pilot. So I didn't know who I was. And I started finding out who I was. And you're not going to believe this. I was class clown, class talker 4 years in a row in high school. Thank you very much. And my mother says, that's not going to bring you anywhere in life, you know. And now I'm a motivational speaker, so that did bring me somewhere in life. Step 8. Step 9. I'm still atheist. I'm coming into step 8 and step 9. FAA calls me up. My airline calls me up. They give me everything in the back. And they said, oh, by the way, your number is up. Would you like to be a captain? And I'm thinking, what? Sure. And they said, well, you're going to be based out of Washington, D.C. And I said, I'll take it. And I went through the training and I passed and I became a captain and I met my second sponsor. My second sponsor came over to my house, another big book thumper. I was like running into you all. I didn't know what was up with that. I thought I'd take a little break for a while. I'm a captain now. I have arrived, right? Kept going to meetings. And he sat at my house. Now I was, you're probably not gonna believe this. I was a liar and a thief and, a literal thief. I used to break into people's houses. Actually, I saw all the neighbors that I made amends to yesterday at the funeral. All of them. And they're all like, how you doing? Are you still sober? Everybody knows. Yeah, I'm still sober. You know, I haven't told my son that you broke into my whatever. So it was the A step, and I wrote all the money down that I owed, and so I was like, okay, cool, man, that was piece of cake. He goes, okay, now what you need to do is you need to fly. I said, whoa, cowboy, let's hold on one second here. What are we doing? He says, well, you have the ability of flying for free. I said, so? You know, did you go make direct demands? Well, I'm not an airline pilot. So I was going to write GSO and say, I'm being discriminated against. But he had me on an airplane once a week flying around this country making amends. It was a nasty, nasty ninth step. So anyway, when we were done with the eighth, I'll never forget this. He was standing down on the stairs and I was standing on one up. And I said, Tommy, I'm at a crossroad here. I'm on the fence. I don't think this is going to work for me. I said, this going and knocking on doors and making amends, and I mean, this is a lot of cash. He goes, you got it. He goes, well, you know, it says in the big book, okay, before we take drastic actions, there's three things we got to do, right? He says, you already discussed it with me. You need to talk to God if it's going to implicate anybody. And I just thought, dink! I got it. I got my out. My mother, my two sisters. I'm in. So I go and I put on a suit and tie. That was my gig. Suit and ties to amends. Haven't figured it out. It was a gray suit, red tie. Maroon, actually. It was really, really bad dress. But anyway, so I put on the suit and tie and I go, my mom's there and my two sisters. I said, listen, I used to break into everyone's house and they're like, oh, here I come. My father's name's Dave. Here I come, Dave. You know, my sisters are like, what? And I said, but I don't have to do this. You know, because if it's going to harm you, I don't want to harm the family. You think I was watching Al Pacino. I don't want to harm the family. So my sister, the smart one, says to me, well, what will happen if you do this? Supposedly, I'll stay sober forever. And so it was like the Three Stooges. Oh, that's fine with me, fine with me. You fine with you? Yeah, fine with me. But so I straight up the tide. Hi, Mrs. Sullivan. Little doggy. Why they call me little? Anyway. So little doggy makes good. So she said, come on in. You know, and I got these Catholic cards, except I got one Jewish card from Mrs. Bronstein. And so I got all these Catholic cards with just a bunch of cash. And so we start talking, chit-chatting, chit-chat, chit-chat, chit-chat. I said, Miss Sullivan, listen, I need to talk to you for a little bit. And I told her. She was like, and she started crying and shaking. And Mrs. Sullivan's old. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm killing Mrs. Sullivan. She says, well, how much was it? And I'm like, I give her the card. It's like hundreds are falling out. And she goes, oh, my God, look at all this money. You took this from me and my husband. And I'm thinking to myself, he's dead. When I go back, this son of a bitch is dead. You know, amazed before I'm halfway through. This is my first one. I'm done. I'm not even amazed. I'm out. And then I go to Mrs. Bronstein and I did it, man. I did the neighborhood. And I went back. And I was screaming and yelling. And they're like, so where you going next week? You know, I'm like, Minnesota. And then Lisa Alfano, what the f*** do you want? So then I got smart and I started making out these cards, these 3x5 cards, because I was so nervous. And I'd write out, I am here doing my ninth step of amends. If I don't stop, and they'd be like, what are you? Get in here. You're embarrassing me. So I do one with my one love of New Jersey, Christina Maria Diorio. Everybody's Italian, right? So I destroyed that young lady, and I had no idea how much I destroyed her. And I knocked on the door, and she let me in. I heard the Bee Gees playing. I mean, it was just lovely. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm going to get a little lucky, because now I'm divorced, and she's looking hot, and now I'm sober, right? Thinking about picking up Christina Maria Diorio. And so on these cards that I wrote, there's three questions. And one of the questions is, how did this make you feel? And she told me. She ended up robbing a bank, getting addicted to cocaine. I mean, it was a mess. She was in like 9 years of therapy because of me. And then the next question is there anything I could do to right this wrong? She goes, oh yeah, put on your jacket. And we go to her sister's restaurant. I didn't know where I was going. And all of a sudden these doors go flinging. I'll kill you! And it's her sister running at me across. And she's like, no, he's making nice or amends or whatever you call it. I'm like hiding behind this little 105-pound girl. And then I made my amends to her and I said, is there, you know, anything I could do to right this wrong? And they're like, yeah, now I've got two girls in the car and me in the back and now they're driving to their moms. So I walk in.
You think you're gonna get lucky?
No. I wanted to go home. That's all I wanted to do. I was like, hi, Mrs. DiMaria. And she goes, Dougie, that's it. Dougie, hi. And her new husband, because she divorced her real husband because of me, of what she told me. And this guy's a gorilla. So he's looking on the couch, he's looking at me, he goes, is this the little fucking punk you're talking about? I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. What am I going to do? Is there anything I could do to right this wrong? Three girls in a car, and I'm going to see the ex. He comes out, and he's gonna throw a punch. So I was going to need to take him out, and I was. I would have done something to protect myself. It was bad. And they all three stopped him, and he didn't want to hear anything. So anyway, we dropped the girls off. I walk Christina to the door like a good New Jersey boy, right? And she says, listen to me. I can't believe that you just did this. I can't believe you did this. She goes, this has been the best thing that's happened to me since you left my life. And there's been a lot of healing here today. And I'm like, you know, I'm black and blue and humiliated. I peed myself a couple times. And so I'm like, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And she goes, never. Call me, never write me, never talk to me. If you see me on the road, cross the street. Whoa. So now I'm going on my third amends, right? So I do all these amends in between, a lot of money. And the last one was to your lovely state, and it is your lovely state because I've been out for 28 years. It ain't my state anymore. It's too cold. Although I love it here, it is freezing. And so I have to go make this amends. I do. I've got a bunch of bench warrants out for my arrest. Now, this is what Pele was talking about. This is why I was able to achieve the type of sobriety that I've been so blessed with for 13 years and that I work at very hard. Okay? I walk into this station. Of course, I call up the airline that I'm flying with Sam. I'm going to do a little jail time. They're like, what? But they already sunk $250,000 into my ass already. So they were like, whatever you got to do. And my family agreed to pay off my alimony child support while I'm away. Plus, I was protected by the union, but still they were great. The airline I was with is a great airline. So I did it. And I walked in and some guy there, you know, McNally, and he's like, what do you want? I'm here, you know. Who are you? You don't know who I am? I mean, where's my picture? 15 years I've been thinking about you. What do you mean you don't know who I am? I said, I'm Doug Muir. He says, Mr. Muir. Click, click. You know, come with me. So I go in the back, and this young district attorney came in, and I was young at the time. And he says, do you have any idea how much paperwork you have just caused me? I'm like, do you understand that I'm in handcuffs and I don't care? And so we talked, and he's very interested in me. He's like, because he's never had this happen before. He goes, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? I said, I'm supposedly. I just added that one to my story and I love it. I'm going to keep it. I'll stay sober forever. These drunks are telling me this. Drunks are telling you, surrender yourself. Okay. So anyway, he goes, but this is the damnedest thing. He goes, I'm looking at your record. You're, you know, good citizen, you're doing well in life, and it seems like you straightened up your act. I said, yeah, but I got to get this thing off. I got to get it done. So he came back, and once again, I have ADD, so it seemed like 9 hours, could have been 30 nanoseconds. And he had a piece of paper, and he slid it across the table, and I looked at a six-digit number, and I almost threw up on his shoe, and I'm like, okay? And then the first thing I thought came to my mind was the big buck. Right, we make the best deal we can. So I said to him, well, how about if we do this? $250 a month for 6 months, $500 for the next six, $1,000 after that, and then incrementals. And he goes, let me get this straight. You're in handcuffs, and you're negotiating with me. I said, you know, I'm just really trying to make this thing happen. I really am trying to make it happen. And he took it. He took it. And I walked outside, and I'm like, now understand this. I'm still an atheist. I'm like, you know, and I walked back in. I didn't have a cell phone. I walked back. Did they have cell phones back in the 90s? So anyway, I walked back in, and the guy goes, you got a lot of balls coming back in here. Can I use your phone? I need a ride. You know what I mean? So my mother picks me up. She goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, take me to the airport. Just get me out of here. So I get on this airplane. It was United. I was getting on a United airplane because I didn't fly for United. I flew for another airline. But they let union people, union pilots fly in the front seat. It's called a jump seat. And then we always throw everybody in first class. And so I'm sitting in first class next to this lady, and the flight attendant comes up. And this thought just crossed my mind that I had no fear, that everything was safe and protected. I was equal with the universe, and I needed and wanted God at that time. So the most embarrassing thing happened. I just went, I want God! Lady next to me is patting my head, flying to this, I'll go get him, you know what I mean? He's probably going up, hey, that pilot in the back, you're giving a ride to, wants God. Give it to him, you know? Like one of those type of cryings. I mean, it was just like all this. And it got to the point, and I tell the story often, there was the Jehovah Witnesses. I let them in, I'm like, hey, come on in! And they're like, whoa, we're Jehovah Witnesses. Yeah, buddy, come on in. You know, 2 hours later, like, can we leave? You know, cause I was like a sponge. I mean, I just, from that day forward, I have never wanted a drink again. 13 years. Just celebrated. And no matter what happens, you know, no matter what, you know, the death of a loved one, no matter what, but this is what I do. 10, 11, and 12. I finished nine. I made my last payment June 2nd, 2002. Paid off that six digit and then some, but I paid it all off, all of it. Made all my amends. And then it's 10, 11, and 12. 10, 11, and 12, as on page 86. I still do written inventory at night. In my package, you'll see there's 12 questions on page 86 when we retire at night. I do that. If you have a loved one here or not, I married a non-alcoholic. My now wife is actually from Rome, Italy. I picked her up on a plane. I was the captain. She was a passenger. It was just one of those things. And, she said, no. I said, well, that's a maybe. Right? And she went back to Rome, and 3 years later, I saw her in Charlottesville, Virginia. And she says, El Capitano. And I'm like, hey, Miss Italy. And we've been inseparable ever since. And I adore her. I don't love her. I adore her. Something good that came out of the airlines. So I'll do my inventory at night. I'll fill out the questions. On the morning we wake up, I have her read the 10 non-denominational prayers out of the big book that I have written also in my package because I love her accent. And then she'll read Al-Anon. She's a black belt. She's coming over to Denmark with us to speak about Al-Anon. I haven't told her how many hundreds of people show up, so we'll leave that one alone. We got a few people. Right, Chris? We got like 10 times this gym packed. It's absolutely gorgeous. Is that lying? Do I need to owe her an amends? I'll make it when I'm over there. So then I will read the 24-hour book. We'll set the alarm. I have an alarm because having ADD, if you're sitting there, you're like, 30 seconds. Oh, a minute. You know what I'm saying? I don't know about you, but that's me. So we set the alarm for 20 minutes. We go into contemplation. I break up my contemplation into five, okay? Five parts of my life. First thing is my body, my health. I go from my toes, go all the way up to my head, back down. If I have an aching, and I get a lot of aching, especially during wrestling season, I'm assistant coach of the high school wrestling team. I get in there with them. I'm a Jersey wrestler. I mean, compared to Florida, ain't nothing compared to us, right? So, I look at my body. And then the next thing I go into is my finances. Finances, folks, don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. Don't be afraid of finances. Because when you know how to work your finances, which a lot of us do not, of which I teach now, your life is very, very simple. It is. It's very simple, of which mine is. So I look at my finances, I look at the companies that I have and their checkbooks, and I fill them up. I fill it up with just unlimited amounts of money because I give so much away. I am so fortunate. I give a lot away. And I play this little game with the universe, like, oh, I give more than you can give back, and it never happens. I'm serious. The more I give, the more I get back. The more I give, it's just huge. You know, Meg has experienced this, watching this little nut of a company go into this huge national corporation to become the number four in the United States. And it's all because, I believe, of the give. I give to kids. I give to high school. I give to AA. I give to international now. It's a giving thing. I believe that all my heart. That's my experience. And then I look at my companies and I bless them. And I bless them with a smile. Sometimes it gets very intense in some of them, but I just bless it. And then I look at relationships. If I have a problem, I will put you in my circle and I will talk to you and then I will make the call. Or I'll let it sit for a while. And we'll maybe do an email, but it will always work its way out. It will always work its way out in time, and I'm very clear on that. Megan and I had a minor situation, and it worked its way out, didn't it? Very lovingly, very beautifully. It always does. Okay, if you're spiritually fit, it always will. And then the next thing is God. And I look at my God. And my God, it's overwhelming to me, you know, going from atheist to now it's everything in my life. God is everything in my life. And I treat my God as such. And I treat all of you as gods. Okay? In the church that I'm at, we say namaste. And that means, you know, the divinity in me welcomes the divinity and notices the divinity in you. Today, my life is about helping others, whether it's on the wrestling mat, whether it's financially, whether it's bringing people through the steps. Every Saturday, I sit in my living room from 10 to 2 when I'm in Florida, and people know that they can knock at my door and I'll bring them through the steps. I've studied Dr. Bob to the nth degree, and I've learned how to bring people through the steps in 4 hours. Four. All of them. Four. Including a fifth step. You know, I don't care if Susie Lou didn't let you touch her private part. That's not the thing I'm going for. I mean, out of my 22 pages, I remember the Tennessee. That's all I remember. How I made amends to the Tennessee. Didn't know who she was. Very, very bad situation. There was an abused women's house in Charlottesville, Virginia, on top of a hill, and I volunteered for it. And 6 months later, I helped all these girls, and I learned so much. Oh, my God, it broke my heart. But I was helping them. And then the lady saw me on TV, and she said, "Are you that guy?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She says, "What are you doing here?" And I told her. And she looked at me, she says, "We forgive you." Oh, tell me that wasn't freeing. So no matter what you do in your life, no matter if you're the biggest scumbag in the world, talk to me. I can get you an amends. Okay? We are so fortunate here. I'm 10 minutes early. Rock on.